Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the midweek show, and twice weekly now.
Twice weekly.
Yes, you informed me last time that we're doing it twice weekly, so I'm going with that.
Lots of playing with needles.
Yes, that. Yep. So, yeah, I just wanted to say thanks again to everyone for listening and spreading the word, getting lots of people to share in their local clubs and guilds and whatever it is, and really is helping us build an audience for this thing and getting a lot of positive comments, a lot of people enjoying it and really enjoying the comments on the website to each of the podcasts.
Yes.
Interesting questions and good suggestions too for guests. Trust me, I'm getting them all down. We're lining them up as fast as we can.
Right.
So.
And don't forget to check out, besides Facebook, Instagram as well. Because it's a great way to share visual things, you know, what we're working on or things that are interesting, and, you know, all of the designers that we work with and stores and things have their own Instagram accounts that we've integrated with. So it's just a cool place to really, I don't know, get ideas and all kinds of things. So check us out, Fiber Talk on Instagram as well.
Yep. And if there are Facebook groups that we should be members of, let us know. I've got a list of half dozen or eight, but I don't have any embroidery ones. So if there are groups, let us know, because then what I do is I post each podcast in those groups so that people can know about it each Wednesday and Sunday. So if there are those, let us know. Yep. So, okay, I was listening. I've developed this hobby. Okay.
You have a hobby, Harry?
You're the tired one. I'm the one who can't talk. Okay. This is going to go well. this recent habit of listening to our shows, as I mentioned last week, and learning things. But so I was listening to the one with Monica Pratt last week, and boy, lots of good response from that. Lots of people either know her or enjoyed it. So that was really neat.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. But her comment about when we were talking about custom framing, about people turning in, you know, please frame my dirty needlework, really, you know, really caught me off guard. I did not think that was a problem, but then I thought back, and that was something that Vanna had mentioned too.
Yes, that, she did.
Yeah, that she gets dirty needlework. So I'm kind of baffled by that. I don't know. I mean, I appreciate that people tend to take their needlework anywhere, and it's gonna get dirty if you do. I guess I'm really extra careful about that. I don't want anything on it, but I was just kind of baffled by that. And I can imagine if you're gonna do a custom frame job or be like Vanna and make an ornament or something out of it and it's all dirty, it's kind of, what do I do with this thing?
Right. Or why? Because those things are not inexpensive, so. You know, to do that. Now, that said, I mean, I have to admit, I had all the greatest intentions of, you know, having the pillowcase trick and doing all of those things. And I have, you know, slowly slid into, putting it upside down on an ottoman in a room where no animals are allowed and children only if supervised and with me glaring at them. So, yeah, I think I need to get back into that though, because I definitely feel it. You know what else too? It's not only dirty, but especially leaving it the way that I do, I don't want things to start wearing and fraying, and which is ironic because, you know, the original purpose of needlework, you know, especially the type that I'm doing now, is to be a tapestry. So it's supposed to be kind of durable, but at the same time, when that was the case, when people were making, you know, the backs of chairs and tapestries and things, they weren't using, you know, neon rays, our favorite things, and, you know, Krynecs and things, other, you know, really fine, rayon threads that will fray easily. So that's
kind
of that.
They're using full metal wool. That'll take a beating for decades. Yes.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it's funny you bring that up too, because, you know, having talked about the Jane Nicholas books and talking about the Hardinger and different historical needlework types, I've come to realize that one of the things that's been most exciting about this for me is the history of this. So being a collector of some things. I've started keeping my eyes out for books about, not only about needlework and how-to books, because those are fairly easy to find, but historical books. So basically, books about the history of needlework. And I know that there's some great libraries out there, and there's some good online resources for those things as well. But I was able to find one book that was published by the Victoria and Albert Museum, which is just a guide to English embroidery. And really all it is a little bit of history and a lot of black and white photos of collections and museums, which is kind of neat. And then I was gifted a book that was bought at the Jane Austen House in England, that is all Jane Austen needlework. So I'm developing a little bit of a collection here of just things that they mean something to me. You know, this is the heritage that I have, and this type of needlework, especially with the people that we've spoken to, there's such a rich history of it. And for me, knowing when these things were made and having a little bit of context for it is really interesting. So.
Yeah. Now I'm going to go way out over my skis here. One of the certification things that the American Needlepoint Guild offers, I'm curious about those things. And yeah. One of them, I'm pretty sure part of getting the certification was you had to research some aspect of needlework, the history of it, and write a piece on it. So I gotta believe that those, I'm pretty sure I'm right on that. And I gotta believe that those papers are on the Needlepoint Guild, American Needlepoint Guild's site.
Cool.
So it might be worth poking around there.
Definitely.
Yeah, because that, you know, that you would get a very narrow look at one aspect, which could be fun in its own right. So.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. It's good because it's inspirational bits, but also, you know, so I spend a little bit of time doing costume design back, you know, in a previous life. So for me, also, this is, it ties in so perfectly because so many costumes, especially of, you know, 400 or 500 years ago, you know, they're all hand embroidered. So a lot of the costuming, you know, a lot of this is evocative of costumes you would see, from the time period. So, you know, it's all kind of tying together and just creating this beautiful colored picture for me that I really enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and speaking of books, Arlene Cohen, of course, our Arlene Cohen segment right here. She just put up a new video. Hour and a half, Arlene, an hour and a half. Man, it took me days to watch all that. But when she records, behind her is just a collection of books, just a wall of books. And
you want to pause it and look at what each one is?
Oh, I have studied I've been trying to read the spines of the books in every show. But so this time she gave us a tour of her bookshelves.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, and she has some cool stuff, some older books. She apparently is the person who unpacks the boxes at some rummage sale, book sale, something. I didn't pick up where it was. But she gets first crack.
Great. Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
So she has a bunch of books. One of them, which really I stopped it and rewound it just to hear it again, is the Encyclopedia of – no, it's – American Needlework by Rose Wilder Lane. And turns out that's Laura Ingalls Wilder's daughter.
Oh, wow.
And she has that book.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah. So that was pretty neat. But yeah, so she was given this whole tour of her bookshelves, and her bookshelves also serve as a storage for her threads and other things. But yeah, she has quite a collection with all the different kinds of stitching she does. She has quite a collection of them. Yeah, so that's worth watching, and a couple of really old ones. I had to chuckle mainly at myself. She's, I think this week she's at, if I have it right, she's at the, Bobbin Lace Convention for North America and whatever. I don't know. I think that's this week. But anyway, there's a banquet, and she had done this collar, in bobbin lace, which is why you would have a collar of lace for the bobbin lace convention. And so she was trying to figure out what top, dress top, whatever to attach it to. So she's showing it and showing how it fits around this blue top she had on, which was the right color because it's a white thing, and so it stood out quite nicely. But she left it on her neck, on her collar of her top during the whole thing. And you know how an accident, you just can't take your eyes off of it?
Yes. So
she's flipping her hair and moving her hair and moving around and talking, and she's giving this tour of the bookshelves. And so she's turning around and she's moving to different places and moving the camera and going all over the place. And all I want to do is, I'm just watching, when is the collar going to fall off? Because it's just... It's just there, you know.
That's not so nice.
When is it going to fall? And it did. Eventually it did. So she took it off. So then I felt vindicated. All right. I had to keep watching the collar. When's it going to fall off? Because it was due to. And sure enough, finally she said, oh, and she, I think she'd just forgotten about it, but it was kind of a chuckle. So,
funny.
And a beautiful, oh, it's beautiful. And then she showed a piece of bobbin lace that she did with DMC floss, 200 colors of DMC floss in a bobbin lace thing that she entered into a thing. Because she was talking about how DMC floss is not ideal at all for bobbin lace because it stretches too much or something. I don't know what it was. But
right.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat thing that she did with 200 colors. So that was fun. That was a fun thing, but I couldn't help but watch the collar the entire time. So, and it turns out, I'm going to be, she lives in New Jersey, and turns out I'm going to be, and doesn't turn out, I mean, I am going to be there, next month. And so it looks like we might be able to get together. I have a morning to kill, so we might be able to get together for lunch, for breakfast. So that'll be fun to meet Arlene in person.
You have to let me know. Where in Jersey are you going to be? Is it northern or southern?
That I don't know, but I'm going to be in Princeton.
That's southern.
Okay.
So. Well,
that's where I'm going to be.
Okay.
Maybe you can make it too?
But it's possible. Depends on when it is. Yeah, that may be possible.
That would be kind of cool.
It would be.
Yeah.
It would be.
Yeah. Yeah. Breakfast with Arlene. We'll have a group.
Yeah, it would be, right? It's
yeah.
like a needlework group from all over.
Yeah.
I like it.
So, okay, well, we'll work that out. That would be really neat. So anyway, that was, but watch, you know, I make fun, but, watch her. It's really good. And, a lot of the books she has are really interesting. And, it's a good show. She does a really good job with that. And, really enjoy every time watching her floss tube shows. So yay for Arlene. Oh, yes. Yes. The Jane Woods Chili Hollow Needlepoint Adventure and Thread Emporium had another post. I'm adding and Thread Emporium just because.
Oh, yeah. I thought I was waiting to see how that was going to go, and then it just kept going and going.
Yeah, yeah. Jane Woods Chili Hollow Needlepoint Adventure and Thread Emporium. That's what I've made it into now. She just says just call it blog. But... Jane Woods, Chili Hollow, Needlepoint Adventure, and Thread Emporium is so much more fun to say. So,
I think anyway. So. If you can keep saying that, I'm gonna encourage that.
At this juncture, I have to read it, but eventually I'll get to the point where I can just, you know, say it without flinching. So that's pretty exciting. But it was interesting post that she had that the American Needlepoint Guild has announced that in 2018 for the seminar that they're not going to allow plug-in lights in all the stitching classes. And I had wondered about that apparently some hotel regulation, which is no surprise, because when you get a bunch of people together for a class,
right.
You know, I mean, there's cords everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered when that was going to come home to roost, because I got to believe, you know, some hotels insurance company said, what are you doing? Extension cords and power strips everywhere. You know, we can't, some fire marshal just had a coronary right there. And, so then it was, she gave a whole list, and we'll have a link for that, a whole list of lights, battery powered lights that, are available, and, Ott lights and Mighty Bright and so on and so forth. And I started poking around with some of them. There was one, this was interesting. There was a grand piano lamp. Now, you know, you think of lights that are made for task lighting, but I'd never thought about just getting a lamp for playing piano. And
right.
Yeah, and so that one, 20-hour battery life on that thing is, looks like quite a bar of LEDs. And that's the thing, you know, LEDs, battery powered LEDs, mm-hmm. anymore are brighter than your standard lamps. So
yeah.
So that's interesting. So and I got to believe that that's going to start to happen more and more with classes all over the place. That it's just, we just can't have all these cords everywhere, so you're going to have to bring battery-powered lights to stitch by. So
yeah, it makes sense, because it makes it a lot more flexible for the room as well, you know, right. than, yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So she has a whole list of lights that you might consider getting, and if you do a lot of these classes, I think you almost don't have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I have a clamp-on one. That's a Mighty Bright that uses 3 AAA batteries. And you just get a few hours out of it. But I use it, and I clamp on a stretcher bar. So, like, if I'm stitching in the hotel room or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's a portable thing. I just throw that in my briefcase when I travel. So that's, you know, I have that. And that's been a really good one. It's bright enough because it's got a kind of a gooseneck thing, so you can get it right down close. And with a magnifier, you can see quite well. But, yeah, there's a tremendous array of these things.
So I've been doing a commute into Manhattan this past week and a half. And the plan originally was, I'll bring Stitchery because I'm sitting on a train for an hour straight. And then, well, there's cars and subways and all kinds of other things involved too. But, what I found was I picked up it's a counted cross stitch piece. It's not a sampler. It's just a cross stitch piece. And it's on 27 count linen. There's no way my eyeballs are handling that in train light. You know, it's I tried it and it was not fun because juggling, you know, between, it's a commuter train. So it's not like a big Amtrak train where you've got some space. You know, the chart itself and then the needlework, and I'm holding it all, you know, the best way for me to do it again is take my glasses off and then holding it an inch from my eyeball, trying to see. So that didn't work out very well. So,
no.
Great plan,
commuter train, you've got 2 strikes against you right there.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah.
So it was a good idea. And, you know, I got a small, you know, it's a small piece, and I was very careful to roll all the extra canvas behind it and, you know, made it very compact, and then got on the train and said, yeah, I can't see any of this. So yes, if I had one of those lights, that would make a huge difference.
Yeah.
So
yeah, those clamp on ones, I found you can clamp them onto just about everything, and it works mm-hmm. quite well. When I'm on an airplane, I will put the tray down and clamp it on the edge of the tray. That works.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I just had thought of another thing. I never get a window seat. I should get a window seat because then I could clamp to the window shade.
You could do that. That's a great idea.
Thank you very much. Yes. All right.
Now, are these lights or are they magnifiers and lights?
Well, I'm talking about a light. I have a magnifier that's on a string that hangs off of my neck.
Oh. See, this is the infrastructure that I need, Gary.
Right. Yeah, no, I've had this magnifier for 20 plus years. But it's just a string and it's a good sized one. And yeah, I just put string around your neck and has a couple rubber feet you rest against your chest and then you just mm-hmm. stitch away. It works out just great. Yeah.
That is a great idea.
So no, the light's separate from that. Now because that was back, there was no LEDs. So, but now I got to believe you can get a magnifier portable enough to hang around your neck with a light on it by mm-hmm. you know, just how much you want to pay and how hard you want to look. So,
it'd be nice to be able to stitch, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Because light, I mean, that's what you discover in those things, that light is, as I think Mary Corbett said, light is far more important than the magnification. Because
it is.
If you'd had good, decent light in that train, you would have been able to.
It would have been better. And part of it is just, you know, having light, but also, and my son is, you know, being a brilliant teenager and illustrating this for me. I'll walk into a room, you know, I am a woman of a certain age, and I walk into a room and he'll be sitting there reading, and I'm like, turn on the light, He's like, it's fine. And I'm like, there's not enough, like, return on the... And then I'm like, oh, my goodness, I am my grandmother.
Yep.
And what it is that as your eyes age, you need extra light to be able to see because your lens is not as transparent. So you're not getting as much light to your retina as you would if you were an ornery, obnoxious teenager. So, so having the light there makes a huge difference because now it becomes visible, whereas before it was not. And it's really just because old eyes, you know, aside from, you know, vision problems and tiny canvases, it's just, you know, as our eyes age, we don't make out these things so well.
Right. Was it Mel Brooks? We mock those who we are to become. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And I remember my great-grandmother, she was a crocheter. That's what she did. And she was in her mid-80s, and she would, first of all, she tried to teach me, and I couldn't learn from her, and I had to learn on my own afterwards because she would go so fast that I couldn't see what she was doing. And she couldn't slow down because it was just such a habit for her after 80 years that this was the speed she went and she couldn't really slow it down too much. But then it turns out that she couldn't see what she was doing either because, you know, she had cataracts and she was nearly blind. And yet she still did. Ironically, my granny did about 47,000 granny square afghans in my lifetime, all perfect. So
yeah.
At least that's one thing, you know, when the needlework, you know, when I can't see well enough to do this anymore, I can pick up a fat crochet hook and I can do something else.
Yep. Yeah, she does them all just by feel. Done so many of them, doesn't even need to look. Yep.
Nope.
At lightning speed. Lightning speed.
And of course, you know, this is like the 1970s, so all the yarns, there was no subtlety to color, yarn back then. It was, you know, it was wool. And the only time that we ever saw that she had an issue was because she was making an afghan that had the commonality with all the squares was black. So everything had a black border. And it turned up she picked up two different dye lots of yarn, and to us it was readily apparent, and to her it was completely not, because, you know, the fact that she could see it at all was a miracle. So that was the only time that there was ever any issue. I mean, every stitch was perfect all the time. It was, you know, it was really kind of great.
Yeah, need to have that kind of talent. Yep.
Was it
10,000 hours to become professional something, or whatever? Yeah.
So it was my granny sitting on a couch watching The Joker's Wild.
Oh, jeez. The Joker's Wild. Oh, man.
Yes. I wore many a granny square afghan poncho in my less than 10 years of age era, which, of course, were all the rage in the 1970s. So.
Of course. Yes. Yep. Okay. Got to be a short one this week. So you had some question about
I do. Yes. So the beginner question of the day. So I'm working on the Diamond Delights piece. And I'm working with, watercolors, by Karen, which is a 3-ply Pima cotton hand painted yarn. So here's my question. In order to do the stitch, and it's flat, I don't know what basically I'm making giant X's, cause I'm too lazy to get up and look at the chart. Anyway, so you take the 3 plies and you separate them, but even still, each of the plies themselves has a twist.
Yes.
Because it looks like each of the ply is actually made up of 2-ply itself. So here's my question. And it may be a technique question and maybe a style question. And I don't even know. When you stitch with it, because it is still plied, right? You have 2 strands in there. If you stitch with it plain as it comes, you know, when you unravel the 3 plies, and the 2-ply really doesn't separate all that well. It's not like it's readily apparent, right? So what ends up happening is, each stitch has a texture because it catches the light differently. And this is hand painted, which of course just emphasizes that effect. So depending on how the light hits it, depending on how, you know, which section of the yarn you happen to catch, it definitely has a dimension and a texture to it. So my question is, am I supposed to run with that? Or am I supposed to be trying to untwist it as I go so that it lies flat, so that the two plies are next to each other?
No, no.
Good.
Not that.
Oh my goodness. Thank goodness. Because, wow, that would be a giant pain to do.
Yeah, no, it's one of the easiest threads, in my opinion, to stitch with. You just stick it in a needle and go for it. Yeah.
Right. And that's kind of what I'm enjoying about it is that, I like the texture that it's giving and I like the effect that it's giving. But then every once in a while I'll get one strand, especially towards the end, that is a little untwisted and it looks different. And I thought, maybe that's what I'm supposed to be doing, because we've talked before. One of the things that I didn't know, was when you're like, let's say a 6-strand DMC, if you're stitching with two ply, I would separate it into three. I would separate into three bits of two and then just stitch with them. And you and then several other people said, no. You're supposed to separate into six and then combine two so that they lie flat.
Right.
And that was something that I didn't know. And I didn't even think about it because I had never stitched that way before. So I was thinking along those same lines, because this is kind of a similar question.
I can see why you'd be confused. Yeah, no, in this case, you want it to stay twisted, much like you would with a pearl cotton. And you don't want it to get the twist to get tighter or looser. You want it to stay as consistent as possible. So
right.
as you're stitching, you would drop your needle every few stitches so that it doesn't get twisted one way or the other.
Yes.
And this is where, when we were talking with Vanna about going up with the eye, and I mentioned that I was getting better results with pearl cotton because it wasn't twisting tightly or untwisting.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. Yeah. But you just stitch that. You don't do anything with it. Just separate it into three and go. And yeah.
Great.
But when silks, your silks that are stranded, sometimes as much as 12 strands, then you separate those, and then in almost all instances you lay them side by side. But those thicker threads, it's pretty rare that you would stitch with more than one strand. It seems like every time I've used watercolors or anything similar, it's always just one strand, and because that's pretty thick stuff anyway.
Yeah, even with the single strand and I'm looking at it right now, and it's definitely two ply within each strand. So
yeah, no, that stays together and stays.
Yeah, I like
twisted.
It.
Yeah,
it's actually you gotta
watch your needle size too, so you make sure you make a big enough hole for that.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't wear. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, that's the other thing is I started out doing this with very long thread lengths and found out very quickly that no, it's much better to work with shorter thread lengths, because it does tend to start to get kind of frazzled looking by the end of the thread.
Yeah, it can look pretty ratty.
I guess just the nature of the cotton itself, if it's Pima cotton, it's going to have, a little bit of it doesn't lie as flat because the strands, the cotton fibers themselves are a little short.
Yeah.
So that makes sense that would happen.
Yeah, that's it's interesting. I tend to stitch with that pretty tight. I want it to lay pretty flat, but that's tension's an interesting challenge for me with that, in terms of it's pretty easy to have it be fairly loose because it's such a thick thread. But I pull on it pretty good to make it stay tight.
Yeah, you would be very unhappy with what I've done then.
Okay.
it's not pulled like to within an inch of its life. It's flattish, but it's got a little bit of, dimension to it, which I think in this piece is okay. Because the piece itself has got some areas that stand up quite a bit. Like you couldn't put glass over this, I don't think, because there's several areas that are, stand up canvas significantly.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm okay with it.
Yeah, hey.
All right, good.
Yep. That one's straightforward. Unlike neon rays, that one's straightforward. Just separate and go. Yeah. So hey, we got to end this thing.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, that's it for the midweek show. Coming up Sunday, we will be talking with Preston and Grace Lynch. They are young ladies. Two Sisters Needlepoint is their thing. They painted canvases. And Don Lynch, who is a designer, Needlepoint designer, is their dad. And so we're going to talk to them and find out what they're doing with their business. And so that'll be Sunday. So that's going to be fun. We'll be back next week, just the two of us, but Sunday with the Lynch ladies. And thanks for listening.
Take care.